This is Youth Beat Radio. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. On today's show, we will be presenting stories from University of Pittsburgh senior Hannah Berkeley Cohen about her recent four-month-long exploration of one country on the opposite side of the world. Stay tuned.
دل آج شاعر ہے غم آج نغمہ ہے.
When I first got out of the airport, my first reaction was kind of I'm on the real life set of a, you know, Slumdog Millionaire. There are children running every direction, you know, half naked with torn clothes, with one shoe, looking super scraggly. You know, there are CNGs, which I think in India they call them tuk-tuks, the little green three-wheeled machines. They're riding every direction. People selling food, people selling anything they can sell. In one direction, you can walk and smell the most delicious food you've ever smelled, and in the other direction, 2 feet away, it's just raw sewage flowing.
Hannah arrived in Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, and home to more than 7 million people at the end of January.
Bangladesh for me was a huge sensory overload. The smells, the colors, the sounds. It was nothing like I'd ever experienced before.
Traveling is not new to Hannah. She's been to Cuba, Guatemala, Haiti, and in April, about 4 months after arriving in Bangladesh, would travel south to India. But her trip to Bangladesh started out on a whim.
So I read Muhammad Yunus's autobiography, and he was the founder of Grameen Bank in Dhaka, Bangladesh. I read his book, decided I needed to go to Bangladesh to meet him and see what Grameen Bank was all about. So instead of going to Pittsburgh last semester, what I decided to do was just buy a ticket to Bangladesh and figure out an internship with the bank. So I went, had a very short, interesting internship with the bank. And what we did was we went out into the field for 5 days and we talked with village women. We talked through an interpreter, of course, and we were able to ask them questions about how they felt they were affected by the bank, if they think they're in a better position now after having obtained loans from the microcredit bank, about their current lives, about how their lives were before the bank came into play. But everything was kind of collapsing because the Bangladeshi government, the prime minister specifically, has a personal vendetta against Muhammad Yunus. So a lot of personality clashes were happening. So I had to figure something else out.
It's important to note, Hannah is a young woman, alone in a country, and to make matters more complicated, she does not know the native language.
And they speak Bangla in Bangladesh, so even if I spoke Hindi or, you know, some dialect from India, that wouldn't have really helped me in Bangladesh. So I learned maybe 4 words each day that always had to deal with either food,
teto, tatka, nunta, talk,
directions,
ekhane, okhane, kothai, kondike,
or money,
amar chai, kotota, beshi, dami.
So I was alone in a city where I didn't know the language and no one really knew who I was, which was the most interesting part.
While in Dhaka, Hannah found comfortable refuge in the home of a wealthy Bangladeshi woman.
I was afforded the opportunity to live with a woman who completely opened her home to me. She's a single mother, which in Bangladesh is a huge taboo. It's kind of reserved for the upper class. She is definitely a part of the upper class. She's a female doctor. So she lives a very westernized, luxurious life in Bangladesh. She gave me a room to sleep in with my own bathroom. And of course, she has 6 maids. So 2 of them were kind of to my beck and call every, 24/7.
Hannah explained maids are girls 10 to 12 years old who leave their parents' homes to work as live-in servants. They are given food, $15 or $20 to send home, and shelter, though this sometimes entails a small closet for the bunch. And in the case of the doctor's servants, they receive an education.
which, although it was awkward having a 12-year-old girl flush my toilet and wash my clothes and make my bed, it was an interesting way of easing into the culture. I think one of the first things to note also about Bangladeshi culture is that although there isn't an official caste system, the class system that they have put in place is much different than ours, in the sense that, if you are of a lower class, it's noted, and you don't deserve the same respect that maybe someone you work for has. So that was one of my first reactions was, I didn't like the fact that since I was a foreigner, people automatically treated me as if I were wealthy and like of an upper class, even though I obviously was. I have enough money to go to Bangladesh. I have enough food to eat. I'm literate. But they don't really know all those things about you. So I kind of, though I wasn't demanding any kind of respect, I received a lot of respect from women of the lower class.
The servants who tended to Hannah were not allowed to sit on couches or chairs. But despite the fact that she was expected to treat the young girls as lower citizens, she could not help but bond with them.
So me as an upper, considered upper class foreigner coming in and asking live-in maids questions about how they're feeling or, asking them to talk about their families or emotions is something new to them. But that was something that was really incredible for me to go in and, with a translator or with made up sign language to go in and kind of create a relationship, like a working dynamic between an upper class person and a lower class person that they've never experienced before.
And although they were treated much different than the wealthy, Hannah learned that the girls didn't really mind leaving home. They finally had enough food and shelter.
So the relationship I ended up having with these women was a pretty interesting one, since it's taboo and it's really not culturally acceptable to kind of put yourself on the same level as these people. So we had to hide it. If I was trying to communicate with them and tell them a story I thought was funny, and the woman who owned the house walked in, we would have to stop and pretend as if they were serving me, not as if I was entertaining them. So that dynamic was really interesting and uncomfortable for me. But at the same time, it is the culture, and I'm not going to try to change that.
After staying in Dhaka for a bit, Hannah found a new opportunity in the rural city of Khulna that would replace her internship at Grameen Bank.
I ended up connecting up with a professor who used to teach at Ohio State, Dr. Dick Love. And he was one of the founders of the International Breast Cancer Research Foundation. And he has an organization, or he helps out with an organization, called Amadar Gram. They build IT centers in rural Bangladesh. And they also build breast cancer research facilities. So rural village women in Bangladesh can get help with breast cancer and early detection. I started kind of working for them in Khulna. We set up the first women-led IT center in all of Bangladesh. So we call it the first women-led knowledge center. They had already found and bought the plot of land that we were going to set up the knowledge center. But aside from that, we had to find these girls to staff the center. I had to organize the entire opening of the center, the whole initiation ceremony. We had to advertise. And how do you advertise an opening of a knowledge center when people can't read? Because you can't just create a pamphlet and send it out that's in Bangla, because a lot of the people don't even read Bangla. I was 20 at the time. I had no experience doing anything of the sort. But since I'm a foreigner and since I'm white, they treated me as if I had all this previous knowledge. But we kind of went from 0 to 60 in, a week. And we are successful because we had about 250 local villagers come to the opening ceremony, which is a beautiful day. It was very festive. Everyone wore their best outfits. We had local politicians come in, specifically women politicians come in, and speak about how important IT knowledge and just an open mind in general is. We staffed it with two older teenage literate Bangladeshi girls who will be helping the villagers to access medical attention, to access things like Google and Wikipedia. So instead of having to, instead of the women having to take their mother-in-laws or their husbands into town to seek medical advice, they literally can hop online, consult with a doctor that's affiliated with Amader Gram, and they will have instant access to first world medical attention.
You're listening to Youth Beat Radio. In Khulna, Hannah saw moments of contradiction that only arise from human observation, and she was lucky enough to capture a few of these moments on camera.
You know, I was living next to the slum when I was in Khulna, so I was in a CNG, one of those green three-wheeled machines, on my way to work one day, and these three boys living in the slums, they're standing atop a garbage pile, and they're brushing their teeth. And one of them was in the process of spitting, which I captured in that photo.
I didn't notice this before she said anything, but it's true. Three boys are on top of what looks like a huge pile of rubble, and one is hunched forward with a long white line of spit jetting out of his mouth. The others are looking blankly into the distance as they brush their teeth.
Just the sense of irony kind of overwhelmed me. You know, hygiene doesn't seem to be an important aspect for people living in the slums, but then you get these hints every so often. That of course they're still human beings. Of course they want to be clean, regardless of how poor someone is. You know, of course they want to keep up some personal hygiene. So I just thought it was pretty funny.
The slums of Khulna offered Hannah another moment of irony, which she didn't realize until after some time had passed.
I was walking home from going to the open air market, and I was walking through the slum, which in the daytime is kind of safe for anyone to a point. And I saw kind of a makeshift barber shop. And there's a young man sitting in the barber's chair, and he had his wallet out, and his wallet was facing me. In his wallet was a picture of Che Guevara, which I thought was great since I had just gotten back from Cuba and all of my friends are really into Che. So I thought, how great would it be to show my Cuban friends that on the exact opposite side of the world, there is a young Bangladeshi man who values Che enough to have a picture of him in his wallet. And I didn't have my camera with me at the time. So I came back maybe about 6 weeks later, 5 weeks later, with one of my coworkers from Amader Gram. And I said, you know what, just go with the flow, just translate everything I say, and I really want to get this picture of this guy. So we go into the slum, and it's at night, so everything looks different, everything sounds different and smells different. And we try to locate where this makeshift barbershop was. We end up finding it, and we end up finding the young man. So I'm just thinking of any kind of crazy story I can make up in my head within those 30 seconds of finding him, that I could possibly get a picture of him looking into his wallet. So we go up to him, and I tell him that my name is Hannah, and I'm an American with with psychic powers. And I've come to Bangladesh to find the boy, the young man with the picture of Che in his wallet. And my senses are telling me that it's him and that I'm very close to him. And if it's him, I want to get a picture of him because this is the reason why I came to Bangladesh. And originally, when I tell that story, people kind of think, you know, how awful, you're taking advantage of some young boy in a village slum. This is awful. You know, you're completely exploiting him. But he became such a celebrity within his village. Everyone was starting to come up to him and get their haircut at his barber shop. Him and all his friends all wanted pictures with the American psychic girl. So I get the picture I want. It's a really funny time because really the whole entire slum is all of a sudden kind of gotten like a new breath of fresh air. They're all running around saying, you know, this American girl is in our slum you know, she came to the barber shop and, you know, like she's come here to see us. So although it was a small white lie, I think it kind of turned the village into a really happening place. So after I had taken the picture, I went home and I was looking at it and trying to edit it a little bit. And I noticed that in the thumbnail picture of Che, there's also a picture of Adolf Hitler. You know, I asked the coworker of mine, Tanvir, I asked him, you know, why, you know, Che is this amazing revolutionary. He's, you know, there's such positive things associated with Che. You know, and then Hitler, I don't understand. And he told me that in Bangladesh, people are taught that Hitler was a great, powerful ruler, which of course is true, but they aren't taught why he was so power and how he came into power and what he did with his power. So I guess people are walking around Bangladesh thinking that Hitler is kind of a Che figure, a revolutionary of sorts. I suppose you could say that, but people don't really have the background knowledge of what terrible atrocities he committed. So I don't know, maybe it was a bit of instant karma.
In another picture, it's nighttime, and men are lined up on yellow mats, some with their heads bent and eyes closed, and others kneeling. And behind them are advertisements for electronics and what looks like bright blue megaphones hanging from makeshift vendor stand.
It's actually like their version of a mall, kind of like a blue-collar mall, where it's kind of an old warehouse with different floors and different vendors selling wholesale products and paints and toners and bolts and nuts and anything you can think of. So Bangladesh is a predominantly Muslim country, so there is call to prayer 5 times a day starting very early in the morning. The nice thing about it was, you know, call to prayer, regardless of your religious affiliation, it's a time to take a deep breath, take a few minutes, collect yourself, and so you can be in the local marketplace, but when the time comes for the call to prayer, everyone stops, everyone pulls out their prayer mats, everyone gets in a line, and they begin to pray. So regardless of the extreme sensory stimulation of the noises and the smells and everything, for at least those 5 times in the day, people take a break and really gather their thoughts and come together.
Finally, in early April, Hannah left Khulna.
I went back to Dhaka for about 2 weeks before I left Bangladesh for India. And I ended up becoming friends with a young man named Tosif. And he drives a Mercedes-Benz. He goes to London every year. He speaks fluent English. And his parents own a few garment factories. And he thought his garment factory was really kind of the cream of the garment factories. So I challenged him if he wanted my perception of what in my mind is a sweatshop to change, then I asked him to give me a tour. So he did. And he was explaining to me how if the garment factories in Bangladesh want to sell to places like Gap, Abercrombie, Old Navy, Zara, then when the people from these companies come in and inspect the factory, they need to be up to the standards. So there are clearly marked fire exits. There are bathrooms, there are fans, there's good light. So, you know, they offer a way out of begging or working in the slums, because at least while I was there, you know, the workers get, about $30 a month, I think. And if I ate out at a local place that your local person would go to eat, I would spend maybe 40 taka at most, at the very most, which would be about 75 cents maybe. So you can eat a great meal in Bangladesh for extremely cheap. And housing, if you have more than one person working in the family, you can afford, you can afford a tin roof over your head. The one thing that strikes me, though, is how much profit the garment factories themselves are making. You know, they're putting the prices and they're putting the labels on these clothes in the factory. So literally they're going from dyeing the fabric to sewing it to constructing entire garments to putting the price tags on them. So you see people handling these clothes that have Zara tags on them, you know, a t-shirt for $40, and these people are going through these clothes, and I didn't think to ask if they understood how much people were paying for these clothes that they were producing, whereas, you know, $40 is more than they make in a month.
Hannah also experienced a Bangladeshi wedding, which was extravagant, to say the least.
The Bangladeshi wedding I went to, it was a Muslim ceremony, but the awesome part about Bangladesh is Bangladesh incorporates a lot of different culture into the Bangladeshi culture. So to me, it looked like what I would think an Indian wedding would look like. You know, there was henna all over the place on the bride's hands. She wasn't dressed in a burqa or anything. She was, you know, her hair wasn't covered. Her face, there was nothing covering her face. She was very sensual looking.
In the photos, women are dressed in beautiful, brightly colored saris and gold jewelry. The room is covered in twinkling lights, orange and yellow silk, and flowers.
The whole ceremony was very different than what I was expecting. It's a 3-day long ceremony also, and I was only there for one part of it. And, you know, it's a status symbol, however many people you have at your wedding. So you try to have as many people as you can. A lot of times they say, you know, about 500 minimum. If you can afford to have more than that, you do have more than that. So something I thought was pretty funny but sad was, everyone who comes to the wedding during the part that I was involved in, spoon feeds the bride a spoonful of homemade rice pudding. And I'm not exactly sure what that symbolizes, but I think it has something to do with the sweetness of marriage. But then, of course, when you have 500 people at your wedding, that means 500 spoonfuls of rice pudding. So as people are coming up spoon feeding her, once every hour or so, she has to kind of go behind the scenes, throw up, come back, and then accept more spoonfuls of rice pudding. So that was something I didn't really understand, but it was also their custom, and you know, it's not for me to understand. I started out in Bangladesh being very pessimistic, and I just had a dark cloud over everything because I'm coming from a very different place and a very different state of mind. You know, people sensationalize other cultures without bringing it back to the fact that maybe at the, you know, at like the primary stages, they were really uncomfortable. And I am uncomfortable in every new place I go to. You know, I don't step off the plane with open arms and an open mind, loving everything. Normally, it's just the opposite. I get off the plane and I despise everything about the culture. But I think you have to get to the point, you know, some kind of a humbling point where you, you know, realize it's not about you and you're in a country with millions of people. You're not going to change anything. So if you're going there, it's for you to learn and for you to share, but you're not going to make the difference. So I think there's no point in going somewhere and not experiencing to the absolute fullest, however much you can absorb.
That was Hannah Berkeley Cohen, a graduate of Columbus Alternative High School and a politics and philosophy major at the University of Pittsburgh, talking about her trip to Bangladesh. After graduating, Hannah hopes to join the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee doing work in Cuba. This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. You can check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu or email us at youthbeat@osu.edu. You can also find us on Facebook, where we'll be posting updates, photos, and other news. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening. Youth Beat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio High Schools, youth groups, and universities. The program is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.